I was able to go directly to the hospital and go upstairs. And of course, I was so happy to be able to go up there. And I went into the room, and it's so difficult verbally, you know, to describe one's feelings, you know, in a situation like this. And I know that there were people in Myrtle Beach who wanted to see her and were not able to see her at the end. And so, in a way, I feel almost guilty. But because I'm so was so close to her, I feel very privileged, you know, to have had this brief moment. I went upstairs, and there she was lying in bed, and the nurse told me that she'd had some sleep and that she was sort of waking up and that it would be okay for me to go in. And all I can say is I felt Baba's suffering before I tell you what happened. I felt Baba's suffering in that room. I felt her silent resignation, and I felt her tremendous strength. And to see it just will always give me courage. And of course, I've been in hospitals a lot, and I knew a little bit about the tubes, and I knew what to expect, you know, about the IVs and all that. So that didn't bother me. But I think when I went in just to see her lying there and had the feeling, you know, that this is it, really, that, you know, this is bad. Hopefully she'll come home. I really believed that she would, but I knew it was very bad. So I had those feelings. And so what I'm getting leading up to is that when I went up to the bed, she had sort of dozed and was sort of half eyes half open, and she was unable to move, you know. But I was above her head, and she did turn her head really quickly when the lady said, "It's John Haynes," and she heard that voice and the name, and I'm pretty sure she understood the word John Haynes, but anyway, she turned her head upwards very abruptly and just smiled, and it was like all this pain of paralysis, but it was just, you know, just broken. It was like the smile was just sort of strained, but it changed her whole face, and she was just so happy to see me. And, it, you know, just that, I'll never forget that one moment. And she knew it was me and held my hand and everything. And I just said that I was glad to be with her, and I knew things were going to be all right, and I knew Baba was with her, and so on and so on, just a few minutes. And that, to me, was worth the straight drive there and everything. And Kitty said, you know, you were so lucky. She said, you just took a chance, didn't you? And you went straight, didn't you? I mean, she was really impressed that I did that. And she knows with Baba, sometimes you have to do these things. And I didn't know I'd get to come in. And I thought it was probably wrong of me. And I thought they'd probably turn me around. But Baba gave me that moment, and I really wanted that moment with her. It was a few days after. It went on for a period of days. She was conscious, and she was conscious for a period of days after. And my mother can tell more than me because she was with her so much, you know. I went back. I stayed the night and was very lucky. They let me do some things in the room, freshen up. I was a medic, as I said, so I know how to change a bed with a person in it. And it was very helpful to the nurse for me to be there. And so Baba gave me that intimacy that I'll never forget. And so I stayed downstairs in the hospital, and Charles and Wendy came in, and Buzz, they were sort of surprised, you know, how I got there, and I told them, and felt very lucky. So we would just get a very brief moment with her after that, and Mother, I think, was convinced that she was conscious because it was the other side of the brain that was affected, the intuitive heart, spiritual side, we feel was not affected, and that was perfectly intact, and there are, you know, many examples I'm sure my mother could give you of that. One, you know, very just two little simple gestures. Annie Boo would always sometimes rest, and talking to people like this, would rest her hand on her fist under her chin. That was a very characteristic gesture of her, or on her cheek, and she did that quite frequently. And I know when she would change position, or they would change her rather, her gown might come up just a few inches above her ankle, and she took her hand sort of with her finger and thumb, like I'd seen her do, and sort of rearranged, like she'd rearrange her dress, you know. So you knew that she was aware of that kind of thing, and she would listen intently. She could squeeze your hand, her good hand. So she was conscious and aware, but unable to, you know, make intelligent decisions about the center, and, you know, unable because of the paralysis to sign checks and things like that. But Baba, I think, you know, was working with her at those last moments, the suffering, and giving her that strength. And then, of course, at the end, it was probably questionable at the very end whether she recognized anybody. But I think she knew that we were there and she could feel the love. I know that. But as to who was who, I doubt if she felt that. But that's just my own opinion. And haven't you heard a little bit about these last moments? How there was a phone call and we went in the middle of the night and she passed away in the middle of the night. Are you aware of that? Well, of course, I'm sure all of us would have liked to have been in the room when it happened. And, you know, people say that, you know, the joke is we're never going to get out of this alive. And if we face up to that, and if we face up to the fact that we probably will be alone in death, and that Baba has, you know, his prayer is to help us love Baba more and more and still yet more and hold on to beloved Baba's Dhamma until the very end. We want to do that, and Baba says to keep remembering me constantly so that we will be able to do that. And I know he was with her at that moment. But selfishly, we would have liked to have been in that room when she passed on. But Buzz came and got me in my cabin after the call from the hospital, and they all went on quickly, and he was nice enough to make a special trip to Cedar Nook. I always stay in the center or usually, and got me, and we went on together, and she had just passed on. And he sang Begin the Begin, and it was a very special moment for all of us around the bed. And we felt Baba's presence, and we felt that she was in samadhi. She was in a very deep sleep and just at peace, you know, with her head turned like this. And it was just a very special moment. And for us, it was a release. Selfishly, we were, of course, you know, in shock. But for her, we were happy because it was a release. And we were praying for that at the end because there was some discomfort at the end. So that's you know, basically what happened. And then it's hard to believe that there are 2 years when I went to her grave with her ashes last night after Aarti, you know, there's no need to get emotional about it. All I can say is it's hard to believe she's gone and I want her back. But she'll never leave. And I wrote a nice poem about her and the love that she felt and the power, her silent resignation to the suffering and the strength, and how the center will always be a gift of her love to all of us. And everywhere you go at the center, she's not there. I mean, she's there. You know that. You look at this cabin or you look at this and you know that she did that in detail. And that's her love and her strength. So we have that example. And fortunately, we have so many of the mandali that are left. Kitty in her 90s is so wonderful and so strong. And for me, as far as my relationship with Baba, I haven't talked much about Kitty. I'll just say that she's a wonderful lady and she loved us so much as little kids. She's always been kind to us. She's always looked out for us. She's always done fun things for us. And I'm just so happy to have that relationship with Kitty, and have come much, much closer since Baba dropped the body. And as I've worked at the center and helped out, she's always been the first to say, John works harder than anyone else and this and that. And John cleans up the sink and John does this. You know, she always gives me those strokes because maybe she knows I need it, or maybe she knows I like to feel appreciated at the center. But I'm very lucky to have had that intimate contact with Kitty over the years, and continue to have it. And I just wanted to say a brief word about Mani and Mara and meeting Meru and all of them and Dr. Gohar, because I didn't have a chance to in 62, and there was all this anticipation, and it was just a wonderful moment, as if I'd always known them. And it was just like everyone talks about. And we feel Baba's love through them, and we see it. And the thing I stress with my students who might ask about Meher Baba is that these people live the perfect life that we talk about and we can't find the examples of in our daily life. They are actually living it, and Andy Boo lived it in a spontaneous, selfless way. They're not do-gooders, and they have that egoless action that everybody talks about but we don't find. And they live that, and you know it, and I know it. And I'm just so grateful to have it. And this trip, for Baba to give me the chance to stay up all night after exams and come making 3 planes by 15 minutes, I knew it was Baba working, and just come directly. I made this celebration early by an hour and a half. I know that's Baba, an hour and a half. And I've been trying to come for 5.5 years, trying to come real hard for 2.5, knowing my son and I are together in August. realizing that the Christmas, I'd like to bring him. I wanted to come for 3 weeks, and I knew I couldn't take him out of school for that length of time at his age. And Erich and everybody have, you know, given me an inspiration. And just yesterday in Mondeley Hall, him talking about strength and doing it for Baba. So just to close, I guess, my comments this time on this tape is to be in the tomb and to hear the arti and to know that we're going to sing Christmas carols. To Jesus Christ, I'm just very glad to be here at Christmas, and I know that Meher Baba is still with us, and I'm very grateful that we are in his hands. All I want is the strength to do my best for him. I wrote him a letter when he said we could write him a letter. I still have that letter, and Monty made me very happy the other day by saying, "Do you remember that letter you wrote Baba?" And I said, "Yes." I said, "I have a copy of it." She said that made Baba very happy. She said, "John, several of them, you know, knew that I was very shy to reveal my feelings, and it all poured out in the letter, and so I didn't know what reaction it had. I mean, I figured Baba liked it." So that was a very special high point that I've recorded in my diary, which Kitty asked me to keep in 62 and knew I'd be grateful for later. And I think I wrote a few pages about bullet carts or something, and then I got involved in Baba, and wish I had, but I have a few notes. But this time I'm being very careful, and so I'm just glad that that letter I did write to Baba as a college student poured out all the conflicts that a young man feels in addition to a profession about human and social relationships and marriage and all the rest of it. So Baba knows, and if we just listen. So I'm one of the trio, I guess, and I feel very lucky to have Charles and Wendy as a brother and a sister. They've been in Atlanta. We've never really gotten to grow up together after I left the house at 15, and people don't understand that. I like to hear secondhand stories of what they've said in talks, because we've never had the chance to really sit and listen to each other talk in detail like this. And I'm very glad that Charles is in Richmond. Wendy is now in Washington. We're all within 3 hours of one another, and there must be a reason for that. So I get to go see Wendy at the Washington Group now, and I get to see Charles in Richmond, and very proud of Charles for all of his study in theology and the fine work he's doing for Baba and the fine work that Wendy is doing through Living Stage and special education and Buzz as her husband and the love that Diane has also for Meher Baba, my oldest sister. So I'm very grateful, I guess, to have known him so young, but in a way it's hard, David, because, you know, growing up, and you knew him as a child, and now, because we don't have the form, is the hard part, you know, of finding him in our hearts and not sitting in a chair, you know, sending letters through Monty. I mean, he is, as Charles said, our best self, our highest self. And just one last sentence comes to me that's very nice to close with. I'm very happy that this just came to me. It's the other thing that Andy Booth said toward the end. When I would say how much I miss Baba, and I would cry and just say, "Oh, if I could just hug him one more time." I had this plan that if I got to hug him, I was going to say, "I love you," in his ear. I had it all planned out, and yet I knew after 62 I'd never see him. She said, "Well, you know," and she's told other people this, she said, "You know, Baba is so much more accessible now. He's so much more accessible." And I think that's true. He's not limited by that form. So thank you for this chance to talk.
I have to leave now, David.
Yeah, it comes through loud. Anyway, did you have a nap here? Stop. It helps if one starts in the beginning, right?
This is just a copy of what I wrote to you. But,
sure.
Let me just get down with that first thing about your birthday.
Okay, my birthday is the 17th of February, 1939.
Okay. And was that correct? A-L-A-I-N-Y-O-U-E-L-L?
That's correct.
And middle name?
None.
N-O-N-E?
Absolutely. K-N-O-N-E.
Okay. Was it through Don?
Yeah, it was basically through Don that I came.
So were you living in California?
No, I wasn't. I was living with Don in Holland.
But you're a British citizen?
Right.
Born in Britain. And you were pretty old at that time.
Yeah, I was, let's see, 18 when I first met Don, and 19 when I came to Barber.
So you studied at the time, or you just gone?
I'd just gone back to school, yeah.
In Holland,
right. I'd had a career as a dancer and a puppeteer before I met Don, and I'd gone back to school when I met Don.
And by that time, let's see, this was 1960, right?
Well, I met Don in 58, and I came here in 59. So it's sort of one of those time periods. Barbara wrote a letter asking Don to, inviting me to come to be with him for Christmas in 1959.
So, you see, Don had written to Barbara after he could come.
I don't think Don had written. As I understand it, and we're looking back on 23 years now, Barbara had written to Don asking Don to come and to bring me with him for Christmas of 1959. I'm not his cousin. Let's get that absolutely straight. I am not Don's cousin. We were lovers for 11 years, and I'm not his cousin. And it was a courtesy title, and I don't know where it came from and how it came about. It was one of those things that happened. I don't think so. I don't remember being introduced as his cousin. No, I know, but I've been called variously. Let's see, Don's cousins, Don's son, Don's nephew. When we were interviewed by the newspaper in Pune, And in Bombay, because Don was talking about what it meant for a Westerner to come to a guru in the East. As far as I remember, in the newspaper cuttings and in the pictures that were in the newspapers, they had on it that I was Don's nephew and Don's, I think one of them said Don's adopted son. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of...
So, I mean, how did Bobby get out of the blue, right?
I have absolutely no idea. I never asked.
I mean, don't you think this sounds reasonable that he would have written it?
No, I don't.
Man that's interested in
I wasn't interested in Barbara in the slightest.
When he first
did. Right. So I don't think it was anything. My understanding always has been that Barbara specifically wrote to Don and asked Don to come and to bring me for Christmas.
So it was you who was asking him more than Don, but it seems.
I don't know. I don't ever remember having seen the letter, or if I saw the letter after this period of time, I really don't remember it. But it was a period of Barbara seclusion, as you know. Mm-hmm. And we were the 11th and the 12th visitors that came that particular year.
Mm-hmm. And so before meeting Barbara, then, like you said, you weren't much drawn?
No, I had always been a seeker or a searcher myself, and I'd been a staunch Catholic and I'd been a Baptist. And I'd had a dabble at, quote, Eastern philosophy, unquote. And I actually, the Christmas before, I had met Ivy Deuce, who I thought was a wonderful person and still do. And she had come to spend Christmas with Don and I in The Hague in Holland. Mm-hmm. And she was very sick, but very interesting lady. And I had looked at a couple of books that Don had around Barbara and really wasn't terribly excited. In fact, to be really honest about it, I almost felt like my mission was in coming was to save Don from a fate worse than death. I mean, when you love someone, you tend to sort of want to take care of them, or at least I do. And I had the sense that maybe this person who was here was not all he was checked out to be, and I was going to come and check him out. Not that it would have made much difference, because when Don made up his mind, that was it, period. So I mean, I really have to be real honest, and I can't say, oh, my God, I was ecstatic, and here was Barbara inviting me, and mm-hmm. it was wonderful and glorious, and I sort of went around in a cloud 19, because I didn't.
Mm-hmm. Can you just describe a little bit about what happened? Because
it was after Christmas. I guess what we should do so that the record is kept totally straight, and I've told the story many times, but I guess I should tell it again so that it's... It's known. The journey itself was absolutely and utterly horrendous. I, for some reason, decided I wanted to go see my family before I left, and I've always had a very strange relationship with my family. And so I went to England from Holland, and I was going to meet Don in Paris, and we were going to zoom off to India. And the first flight that I got on was a Air France Caravelle, which had just gone into service at that time. And when they first started up, the engines, all the lights in the aircraft went off and it filled with smoke, and that was kind of strange. And they took us off the plane and stood us on the ground till they brought the buses over, then put us in the buses, and then they put us back on the plane and they started the engines again. I mean, this is an elapsed time of maybe an hour and a half. And at that point, apparently the force from the engines blew off the tail of a Pakistan International Super Connie that was parked too close. So this was just the beginning of the trip. So I arrived in Paris hours late, and Donna's always, when anybody wasn't as he wanted them to be, was cross. And it was so late that I couldn't even get any dinner, which is, Paris is not 24-hour-a-day city. And he then announced to me that we wouldn't be able to leave at the time scheduled, and that I would have to be responsible for going to the airlines and working out a new schedule, which I was happy to do. And, of course, in those days, there weren't 10 and 11 flights a day from Europe via this, that, and the other to Bombay. There were one or two a week. And so I went to the airline, and originally we were to come on TWA, and so I had them, they rewrote the tickets completely. And I met Don, I guess, that night, and said had arranged to leave on whatever the day was. And he said, well, that might not happen. I still haven't concluded negotiations that are going on. And they were very politically important as well as monetarily important. And anyway, to cut a very long story short, this happened three or four times successively. And eventually what happened was we were able to take a TWA flight through the Middle East. And we finally zoomed off to the airport and got on the plane, which in those days we considered vast because it was a Boeing 707, and flew to Rome. And we were in the transit hall, and they came up and they asked for our passports. And they said, we're terribly sorry, we can't take you, Mr. Yule, because you don't have a visa for Saudi Arabia. No one is allowed to transit Saudi Arabia. And the plane apparently stopped there. So that sort of put the kibosh on that particular part of the journey. And they said, you'll have to wait and go on a Qantas flight, which will take you to Pakistan, and then you can connect in with the Pakistani Airlines to Bombay. So we went off to spend, I think, most of the day in the hotel in Rome. And it was absolutely pouring with rain. It was unbelievable. It was cold and wet. And by this time, neither of us were exactly sweet and gentle. I mean, we were both not quite ravening idiots, but in close to it. Don was never very good at traveling as far as his temporal discipline or whatever you want is concerned, and I wasn't much better, I must admit. And so we spent the day, and they called us and said the flight had been delayed, and then they called and said there'd been an accident at the airport, and apparently we found out afterwards, because I looked it up in a newspaper, a British Overseas Airways Comet coming into land had been diverted because another plane had had a minor accident on landing. And there's a 12-point control that they do before they land. And number 10 is wheels. And they thought that they got to number 11, and so they continued from number 11. Of course, it landed without wheels in a pouring rainstorm. And because the engines are in the wings, there's no way to lift it. So we spent an additional 12 and a half hours while they fiddled and faffed around trying to get this thing going. And eventually, the following afternoon, they called us and said they were ready to board. So we went out to the airport, and we went from the other terminal, which was quite strange, and we went on Qantas, and we got on board, and we taxied out, and they started up the engines, and then they slowed down the engines, and I literally said to myself, oh my God, what now? And we went back around, and then they threw up a coat and came down the aisle saying, does anybody own this mint coat? And a lovely Australian lady sitting next to me said, oh yes, dear, I left that behind, how terrible. So finally we took off. And we made it to Cairo, and the pilot announced that they were redoing the runways in Karachi because they hadn't got runways that were strong enough for 707 jets at that point, and that if we weren't there by a certain time, we would not be allowed to land. We would have to overfly and go on to Bangkok, at which point I think Don and I went and sat at opposite ends of the plane. I mean, we were both quite hysterical by this point. And so when we got to Cairo, the pilot said, to speed things up, we'd like everybody to stay on board. We'll have the cleaners come on and we'll just get out of here as fast as we can. And so we literally shrieked across the desert, and I think everybody on the plane was willing the plane on because they were all delayed and they'd all wanted to get home for Christmas, which they weren't going to do. And finally the dawn came up and we had headwinds and God knows what else, and it was obvious we were not going to land in Pakistan. We were going to have to go on to Bangkok. And so finally at the last minute the pilot came on and said that the authorities delayed the resurfacing project so that we could land. So we landed. And we went through customs and immigration, and they sprayed the plane because of yellow fever or whatever we might have brought from Egypt. And I came outside, and the bags came outside, and I stood, and I waited, and I stood, and I waited, and no dawn appeared, and nothing happened. And I thought, my God, this is kind of strange. So after an hour of this, I went back inside, and they had virtually arrested Don because he had flown into Pakistan without a visa. So I sat and talked with them, and by this time, I must admit, I did not have too much finesse. And so by giving them my passport as surety, they agreed to let Don leave for the day. And we went off to the hotel, wherever it was, the only hotel there was. It was the airline hotel at that point. And sat and had a breakfast of hot porridge and bacon and eggs, and it was 190 in the shade as far as I was concerned. And then we took a rickshaw ride around Karachi. And I saw my first mast, which was very interesting. And unbeknownst to us, they had told us the next flight to Bombay would be the next day on Air India. They hadn't told... No, on Pakistan International Airlines, beg your pardon. And they hadn't told us that there was an Indian Airlines or Air India flight that was going 2 hours after we arrived, because at that time, things were still very dodgy between Pakistan and India. So we got stranded for another 24 hours. And when we did finally arrive in Bombay, there was a press conference at the airport, and I remember eating turkey sandwiches. I don't know why it is, but Baba and food and I have a very close concurrence, and they were asking all sorts of questions of Don, because that was part of what Don was there for, was to talk. But they were also quite fascinated by me, and I mean I didn't know what to say, because I didn't know what a guru was, and I really wasn't interested in a guru, and I was interested in looking after Don. And we got in Baba's car. And I really don't remember too much of the drive, except for the smell, which is something that's always stayed in my mind's eye, and the blue light of the fire everywhere as we drove up into the hills into Pune. And we stayed at the Napier Hotel.
Is that hotel still there?
Which one? Napier. I think it's still going. It was the last time I was in Pune. It's a real old, it may be something else now, but it was a real funny place.
It was used to.
Oh yeah, a lot of Baba people stayed there. There or the Turf Club. And the one thing I was absolutely petrified of was snakes, and that's another Baba story along the way. And the first thing that happened when we got out of the car was the snake charmer appeared with his basket and took the top off and proceeded to have the blast. I about went into absolute hysterics, and they could have put me in a mental asylum, I think, at that point. At any rate, I have for some reason insisted on buying two boxes of panettone to bring for the mandolin. I didn't really know panettone. It's a cake... a bread cake with lots of food in, which is very special in Italy at Christmas time. I have no idea why I insisted on doing this, but I insisted. And I asked Mayachi if it was safe in the car. I wanted to take it out, and he said, no, it's... I mean, he went on and on, bless him. It was perfectly safe in the car, and I was perfectly sure it wasn't safe in the car. I was sure it was going to be stolen or whatever. Having lugged this stuff all over the place, I was determined it was get to who it was due to go to. And... So we went up to our room, and I remember us having some sort of meal. I don't really remember what, but being absolutely exhausted and sleeping in a huge bed with a huge net, mosquito net around one. And the next day getting up very early and getting washed and dressed and back into the car. And there, lo and behold, was one of my panettones with a corner nibbled out. Mm. And I was so cross about that. I remember being real cross about that. And I said to my dude, see, I told you something going to happen to this panettone. And we drove off, and we arrived.
Did he go with you?
Yes. He and the driver were with us. Mm-hmm. And we drove through Ahmednagar, and we drove all the way down from Pune, and we drove straight out to Mehrazad. And I can remember... No, we didn't arrive at Mehrazad. We went straight to Mehrazad.
It was very early.
And I remember arriving there, and the car going around... the driveway, and there was nothing there like there is now. Mm-hmm. And getting out and sort of thinking to myself for a split second, boy, you know, I knew this place was crazy. I mean, you know, nobody would want to be out here in the middle of absolutely nowhere. And we sort of, there was a great bustle and people were coming out and welcoming Don. And I'm really not conscious at all. I never really have been of who it was or what it was. I was just conscious that we'd arrived somewhere. And we walked over to the hall. And as we went through the door, Barbara came through the other end. And all I can remember is sitting on the ground and bursting into tears. And Barbara coming over and somehow my getting up and him giving me a hug. And that's my recollection of meeting Barbara. And in the infinite second of either seeing him or being in his presence or a combination of those things, I knew exactly that I'd come home and I knew exactly who he was. There was absolutely no question in my mind whatsoever. But until that time, I wouldn't have said there was doubt, because to have doubt, you have to ask the question. I hadn't asked the question. I just felt that this was just some strange person who Donald got involved with, and that was basically it. So that really, in a nutshell, and there's obviously more to it than that, is my coming to Barbara.
Was it that day that you all went up to Maribor and there was a darshan up there? Do you remember?
No.
Same day?
Which darshan are you talking about out at Maribor?
Well, I thought the day you arrived there was a program at Maribor that Barbara went to and you all went to. And then you stayed the night at Maribor?
No, we stayed that first two nights at Maribor. In Dr. Duncan's cottage. It was two nights or three nights. It's three nights, I think. And then we moved to Marisad and we stayed in Marisad for the rest of the time. Well, I remember going to Arangon.
Yeah.
But that was much later.
And then were you here for that program here in this trust compound? Or had you already left when Barbara came here?
Yeah, as far as I know, he came here and we came before he did to the compound, and he came for that.
So you were still here?
Mm-hmm.
And you must have left the same day or the next day?
Either the same day or the next day. I think it was the next day.
You were still here, because according to Rav, that, let's see, he gave Darshan there an end on the second. You all arrived, I think, about 30th.
No, we arrived on the day after Boxing Day, which is the 27th.
27th of December.
Mm-hmm.
And then Bala came out there on the 2nd of January. Right. Out there. And then you stayed at Marisad on the 1st and 2nd?
No, we stayed the 27th, the 28th, and the 29th at Maribor, and then the rest of the time we were in Marisad.
It was about two or three nights
at Maribor.
Yeah, because then, so it says on the 4th, there was another darshan with the center.
No, you stayed
the third night.
Well, we must have left here around the 6th or the 7th of January, maybe later than that.
From India?
No, from...
So you came on the 27th and left on the 6th?
No, later than that, because I stayed with Barbara almost 3 weeks.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was just about a week.
Mm-mm.
So you were at Marisad then more than 2 or 3 months?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
As
far as my recollection goes.
Yeah. So about the 27th, you came there, say, three nights, and then the rest of the time at Marisad.
Right.
So do you know about when you left there? Was it middle of January?
I could look up in my ticket, but it must have been towards the middle of January. Because we went to Pune. I think for one night when Don talked, and we went to Bombay for three nights because I went and saw friends of the family.
So, did he meet the press in Pune, you were saying?
Don met the press in Pune and in Bombay at Green's Hotel.
Mm-hmm. I think those clippings maybe
are. Yeah. There was a woman who was a member of the Congress Party who was at that point a rising star in the Congress Party. I couldn't remember her name to save my life at this moment in time. But she was also involved, and she was the one who was, in a sense, presenting or sponsoring Don and Don's speeches at the Queen's Hotel.
Queen's.
In Bombay. And
so you didn't actually write in the car with Bob when he came ahead of time?
When he came here, we came... That's really interesting because someone else asked me that a few weeks ago and I was racking my brains to try and remember. I'm pretty sure we wrote Mikado Arangon, but that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it would make sense because he gave Darshan on the 2nd of January.
So. Yeah.
And you're in the film with him and Arangon.
Right, right. Oh, I know I was in Arangon with him, no question about that. But it was, and I'm pretty sure we rode Mikado. I'm pretty sure we rode Mikado with him.
So, well, what happened all those weeks in Arangon?
Ah! Thereby hangs the tale. Well, we
don't have anything
about we basically fit it into the daily life.
Where were you staying?
We stayed right opposite the hall in the little. There's a little like a little house is what I call it. And there's two rooms.
There's two rooms there. The left or the right one.
We stayed in the as you face it, the left one, the bigger one of the two. There's one that's a tiny room. And one that's got a big one, and Don and I stayed in the big one. So what went on? Well, the way I would best describe it is that I was totally spoiled by Baba. We were taken care of, and I mean, I can only talk from my point of view. I was taken care of in ways that are just unimaginable to, I think, most of us, and to me in retrospect, and I'm amazed. Baba would come out in the mornings and he would want to know whether you'd slept well, whether you'd eaten well, whether your stomach was all right, whether you'd been to the bathroom, whether you were comfortable, whether there was anything you needed. In my case, I think, I mean, my remembrance is that virtually every day he wanted to know if there was anything special I wanted to eat. As you know from the movie, I was very thin, which I'm not now. And he was really insistent upon my gaining some weight. And there would be a time period where one would sit and talk. He and Don were discussing, I think, the republishing of God Speaks and some stuff around the issue of the discourses. And then there would be storytelling of Baba's travels and things that had happened. We would play cards. We would play seven tiles. Francis would recite some poetry. He was writing his book at that time, and he would come in and recite various parts of it to Baba.
Which book? Best Day
Sing? No, the one before that.
Stay with God.
Stay with God. And there would be various business things, I assume, going on, because Adi would come out, and Maji would come, and one would just be there, and it, you know, Baba, I never have the sense, I have no remembrance whatsoever of Baba ever saying, well, you know, you must go outside and amuse yourselves because I've got things to do. Mm-hmm. Whatever was going on, one was there. And Don and I had some, what I would call personal interviews with Baba. I had my own time with Baba. I had a few minutes alone with him at one point. I would wander around the garden.
Mostly all the time you saw him, I was in the hall, or did you ever see him in the bedroom?
Saw him in the bedroom a couple of times. He came out and sat with us on the veranda, which is now all enclosed and things. He came out a couple of times and we were eating lunch and checked that we were eating properly. And on one occasion, I remember getting fresh fish and I was just so amazed at the idea of getting fish. And he used to have, Nacha came several times with various sweetmeat things that she'd made for me and wanted me to, that Bob had wanted me to eat. I read some because I'm an inveterate reader and I'm always reading something. And I would tell silly stories which made Bob laugh. Bob at one point said that I was his other clown and Nita Villayard was one and I was the other one. What else can I share? It's difficult to put it into sequence, and I'm sort of jumbling it, and it's not really in sequence, and I realize that makes it more difficult for you. He made a statement which I found rather confusing, and I don't really understand it, was that I was one of the last of the old lovers, and now the new lovers would come. We had a long session one day when he asked what I wanted to do. And Don had warned me that this might come up. And we had discussed the things I wanted to do, and so I discussed with Baba the fact that I was very interested in languages and very good at languages, and so therefore could be an interpreter, and that I liked colors and design, and maybe interior design was something I would do. And the other thing that I liked was people. I was fascinated by people. And Baba immediately said psychology. And he said that I would be a very good psychologist, but it would be very hard, and that I would be a part of the new psychology because he wasn't pleased with the old psychology, it didn't work. And, I mean, I'm paraphrasing in a few key words what was a very long discussion. And we spent a lot of time on that, and he came back to that on several different occasions. He had time when he sat with Don and Erish, and I would sit with Mommy and Peter. Peter and I got along like a house on fire because I had my own little dog at that time, Albert. And there were letters went backwards and forwards there for a long time, and Baba would send his love to Albert, and Albert would send his love to Peter, and so there was a whole thing of animal stories going backwards and forwards. And then the lepers came to visit one day, and that was a great event, and there was a lot of activity in the compound and a lot of people rushing hither and from and to and fro and backwards and forwards and erecting a little stand where they could stand up and Baba could bow down and wash their feet.
That was filmed.
Yeah. And at one point I got to hold the umbrella over Baba, which I remember making me incredibly nervous and having to control my nervousness and allow the experience very much to take place. It was one of the most moving things I've ever seen. And I realize now that in a sense, Baba was teaching me something I needed to know, and that was because I deal with the mentally retarded and the physically handicapped. That his story about them being beautiful birds in ugly cages is just so true. And at one point I broke down in tears, and I think it was Dr. Dada Chanji who came and took the umbrella at one point, and then somebody else did. It was, from my perspective, it was exhausting. It was very, very hot. It was very emotional. It was just like Baba was, as well as working on the lepers, was just stripping stuff away from me. I felt like a piece of furniture. And I felt it very much at the time, and then locked it away for, until many years afterwards. I was very clear on it. That went on for a long period of time, and everybody was exhausted from that. And another time, a very funny experience, and I had my own comeuppance and my own, as Rana puts it, my own needling from Baba. We were all sitting in Mandalay Hall one morning and just talking about what was going to happen during the day's events, and the gate bell rang, and someone came to tell Baba that it was Harry Dettelchild, who is a merchant seaman, American. And Baba just sort of looked and said, you know, here I am, I'm supposed to be in seclusion, but what can I do? My lovers still come and find me, send them in. And he did his usual sort of teasing of, you know you're not supposed to come and see me, and what are you doing here? Like, come here and I'll give you a hug at any rate. Rah! You know, being really gruff and almost giving the impression of being angry. And yet he obviously wasn't angry, and he was delighted that someone had cared enough to take the risk. And Harry had two suitcases with him. And he sort of plunked them down and got his hug and his kiss from Baba, and he got several hugs from everybody else, and he got another hug from Baba. And Baba just sort of looked and said, all right, what's in these suitcases? What is this? And so Harry opened one suitcase, and it was a big suitcase, and it was jam-packed full of cartons of cigarettes. And I, without, of course, thinking or feeling, went, thinking to myself, my God, you know, how can you bring cartons of cigarettes in front of Baba? I mean, it's the craziest thing. And I have very sort of, what's the word, strict ideas about the proprieties and non-proprieties. I guess it's part of my background. And, of course, Baba caught this in an absolute flash and turned on me and said, do you smoke? And I said, yes, Baba, I do. And he said, which of those do you smoke? And I said, I smoke Salem. So Erish handed him the packet of Salem, which he handed me as if he was going to hit me with it. And he said, now you can have them and you can smoke, but you must never smoke more than five a day under no circumstances. And I said, yes, Father. I mean, by then I wanted the floor to open up and just swallow me and vanish and get out of this. And I made a fool of myself and I'd embarrass someone and I made someone else. Anyway, so we went through that experience and I cannot to this day remember what Harry had in the other suitcase, but I have a vague recollection of it being whiskey and medical supplies, odd sorts of things like bandages and elastoplast, which you call band-aids. And it was just so funny and so interesting. And he was this funny man who had spent hours in a taxi and I'm sure a small fortune to bring cartons of cigarettes. Yeah, Harry was, I think, in those days in his late 20s. He was just a dear.